Well, my name is Edward Waugh, and I am sort, I guess you'd say, grand nephew of Doc Hay. And we moved into John Day in 1942. That was during the war. And I found John Day to be a very backward type of a community at that time. Coming from Idaho over there, where we had running water and everything, in the Chinatown part of John Day, they didn't have running water yet. They didn't have a sewer system yet, and so that was sort of an experience. Yeah, the Chinatown part of John Day was made up of the Kamaw Chung building and several small shack-like residential homes around there. I guess at one time a lot of Chinese resided there, and they had sort of a community and a community f truck far garden, and there was a caretaker, an old caretaker there when we arrived, and he sort of took care of the property and raised some vegetables and everything. And of course, right behind the John Day or the Chinese area there were just rock piles where they had the dredging. The gold dredge came through and just left piles of rocks, and they had ponds, and the Canyon Creek went by there and everything. And it was sort of interesting for us because as children we went back in there and played. We had the creek and they had the dredge ponds and everything. So yeah, it was fun time for me.
How long did you live there?
Well, as I said, went in there in 1942. I went through the primary school and the high school system there, graduating in 1950 from the Grant Union High School. Then I was off to college for about 7 years. So during that period, of course, I was just in and out. My parents lived there, and my dad took over Doc Hay's herb practice, and so he took care of Doc Hay and the property there till Doc Hay passed away.
Recycling truck coming. Is this window open by chance? It's not? Okay. We probably have to wait till the truck moves.
Yeah, that's quite a nail, that
It's gonna
recycling.
be really, that's a lot of recycling there.
Yeah,
I'm gonna turn it off. Okay, so where did you live in John Day?
well, when we first got there, of course, it was during the war, and my dad couldn't build a home or anything like that. So when we first arrived, we stayed in the Kamaw Chung building. And my dad and mom stayed behind the kitchen there. There was a bedroom there. And then my brother and I stayed in the two bunk beds in the kitchen. And that lasted for about a year. And my dad was very innovative. He, since we couldn't build a new home, we could remodel an older home. So he bought a smaller home, had it moved over to the site that it's presently at, and added on and expanded on that small home. And that took, I would say, roughly a year during the war there because of material scarcity and everything. So we continued to live with Doc Hay in Kamaw Chung building. And I remember after school splitting firewood, carrying it across to to do the cooking and everything. And when we arrived, there was a water pump right out in front of the Kam Wah Chung building, another water pump in the kitchen, and that gave us our water. We had to heat the hot water. We had to pump the cold water that we used. There was no, as I say, no water system at that time connected.
So there were five people living there then?
Yes. Doc Hay had his private bedroom, and we all ate in that front room, in that central room there. There were friends in the city that would come down every once in a while, and we would invite them to dinner, and it just sort of an ongoing thing. Whoever is there at the time of dinner, we just sat down and had dinner. All five of us lived there for about a year.
So I wonder, what was he like at that time? What do you remember about him?
Well, when we arrived, of course, he was blind, and he was alone. He had just lost his business partner, Lung An. And Dad, being a relative, felt obligated to go there and take care of him. And knowing some herbs from China, he very quickly took up the practice that Doc Hay had there. And with Doc Hay's expertise and his knowledge in reading Chinese, he read all the herbal books, and so he gradually took over Doc Hay's practice. And we took care of Doc Hay for several years there while he lived in John Day. But my remembrance of Doc Hay was, although he was blind, he knew everybody that came in. He would recognize their voice and just, yes. He just identified the people just immediately. And he loved his cigars, and he had a big soft chair in the front room there, and he'd sit there and smoke his cigar and fall asleep. Well, after we had moved from the building across the street to our new remodeled home, he didn't immediately go over with us. He wanted to stay there. Well, one evening, he fell asleep with his cigar and nearly burned the place down. So after that, we said, no, you're going to have to come move over with us, because it's just too dangerous this way. So he consented to do that. But unfortunately, he fell and broke his hip. And that was his downfall. We had to bring him into Portland then and put him into a rest home where they could take care of him, because he's just too much for Dad and Mom to take care of. And I think he lived there for 2-3 years, and then he just decided there's nothing to live for. So then he passed on. But he was a wonderful man. He knew everybody. He took care of a lot of people. And as history would show, money really didn't mean much to him. He had these checks that people wrote for the herbs, and he just stuffed them away, thinking they were usable like cash. And if he needed money, he'd just go cash one, and that was him. He had enough to take care of himself, and that's all he mattered. Wealth was not a big thing with him.
I was wondering what his importance in the community was. Could you, even as a child, could you tell, did people like him? Oh, how was he respected,
He was well-liked in the community. People would go down there, and he always had candy kisses for them, the little taffies, peanut butter taffies. And everybody that comes down there, they always were given some taffy or something to go home with. And as I said, it was sort of a community meeting center for a lot of the people that come down, and at dinner time, they knew about when dinner was, and they want to come down and have a Chinese dinner, they just come down and...
People would just come and eat?
Yeah. They just come down and visit with him a while and stay for dinner, and then after dinner, they'd go home. And there were several families of people that mainly the husbands come down and visit with him and with my father and mother there, and we'd just invite them to stay and have dinner, and they always were glad to do that, because at that time there were no Chinese restaurants anyway in town, and my dad was a pretty good cook. So, yeah.
Now, I was told that, I guess maybe when he broke his hip, that he was cooking a chicken or something, because it was like, they found a chicken when they opened it up that was being cooked, I guess, and abandoned when they closed the Kam Wah Chung building.
That I'm not sure of, because that all happened after I left for college, and so I'm not so sure the circumstances how he fell and broke his hip, but all I'm aware of was the fact that that had happened. And back then, you know, they didn't put screws in joints to help the healing, and of course it never did heal right, and he was never able to get up and walk again.
Did your dad ever tell you stories about, like, you know, that go further back before you at all about Doc Hay?
Well, they lost contact with one another for a long period of time there. We just knew that he was there, but we didn't know much about him. And because he was doing his thing, Dad was doing his thing, and he had a business partner then, and they were doing well, so there wasn't any worries. But when his partner died, and him being blind and everything, there was just a need for him to go back there and take care of him at that time.
Did Doc Hay ever experience any prejudice or anything that you know of?
From what I have heard, the community accepted him quite well. As a matter of fact, I guess they were quite the ladies' man. Lung on, and he were in their early days, you know. And he wasn't always blind, so I don't know the circumstances that led to his blindness. But I know when my father got there in 1941, he went ahead of us. And so he started getting some herbs for Doc Hay, and he got to the point where he could see for a while, and he was he had enough sight to walk up to town and get a haircut and walk back, and that was quite an accomplishment, I thought, because he had been totally blind for many years, and he enjoyed that for a while, but then gradually he lost it again. But everybody that I know of liked him. I understand that there were some, I don't know whether it was prejudice or just some problems with the medical medical profession. They didn't like his practicing medicine, and they tried to shut him down, but there were enough resident supporters that they knocked it down every time they brought it to court, and they never were able to get anything with that. So
the medical profession was trying to shut him down.
Yeah.
And what did the people do?
Well, the people supported Doc Hay, of course, because they always got well when he treated them, and they not necessarily did so otherwise, you know. It was that's, I think, where he gained a lot of his support and reputation. He was the source of last resort. And oftentimes, they were pleasantly surprised with Kier's. And I know when I was a kid growing up around there and seeing some of the patients, I'm a believer of Chinese herbs. If he were here today, breast cancer would not be a problem as far as with him. They were able to take care of that very simply.
Did you see any of those examples firsthand?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see them firsthand, but Dad talked about, you know, and he just cured them.
Any
that.
Specific example your dad talked about?
No, not really. Just people come in. She had little cancer in their breast, and just did this, and you know. And I say about 6-8 weeks, they were on their way for recovery. You know. And one thing that really sticks in my mind was one winter afternoon. A party came in from Burns, Oregon. They carried this lady into the house because she couldn't walk. And Dad took him back to the treatment room and worked for, I think, maybe about an hour. And doggone it, this lady didn't walk out of there. And I was so impressed with that. I said, well, what'd he do, you know? But I guess he scraped her back and did some stuff. I guess it was a complication of the flu or something like that affected her nervous system and the back, and to the point where she just couldn't operate. But that is still, I can remember that day that he was able to do that. And, you know, that kind of results, immediate results, is hard to find anywhere else.
Well, and you're in the medical profession, too, so obviously.
Yeah. Well, that's why I asked Dad about, you know, what I would need to do to probably follow or to do what he was doing. He says, well, first you got to learn to read Chinese. Well, growing up back there in a small town where we were the only Chinese family anyway, that was not a possibility. But so I at the time aspired to just become a physician, a doctor. But as we grew up and in high school, this best friend of mine, the Carpenter family, the father sort of had good influence on me. I respected him very much, and he suggested, you know, you should think about going into dentistry. He said, doctors, they never have any time to themselves, you know. He says, and you'll be doing the same good. He said, you'll be treating patients, but you have more time to yourself. And I said, gosh, you know, he might have something there. So as I went through college, that became more of a thought for me. And then in my sophomore year in college, and I decided, yeah, I think I'm going to go that route. And so I'm a dentist instead of a doctor.
Well, I wonder, you know, you hear about those miracle stories of Doc Hay, and, you know, you go, but you're saying that you're living proof that you witnessed it.
Yes. I mean, that was just not the only one thing. That there was another incident where a John Day rancher family that, you know, the Kearns family and the Oliver family around Grant County were big ranchers around there. And he cut himself butchering, and he got gangrene in his hand. And they were going to cut his hand off at the wrist because the gangrene was moving up his arm. So they came to Dad. And Dad treated him, I imagine, about 6 months. And he was able to save the thumb and two fingers. And they're working today, or they were until he passed away. But he saved his hand, and...
Your dad or Doc Hayes?
My dad.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. But he learned from Doc.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, my dad took over his Doc Hayes practice, I'd say within the first year he got there, because he just sort of turned it over to him rather than do it himself. He just turned it over to Dad. And so, yeah, Dad was a practitioner after that.
What is it like to be the only Chinese family in an area like Zhongdei?
Well, as a child, I'd never experienced anything different, you know. I immediately got acquainted with some children at my age around there, and we just hit it off and just went on from there. And, of course, going to school there, and the grade school was, what, 2 blocks from where I lived. And so I had no problems, but... there, I would say that in the 40s, there were still some prejudices, you know. I know when I was growing up in high school in the late 40s dating Caucasian girls and like that, and you could feel that there were some people that didn't like the... so I sort of... danced around it, you know.
Because they didn't like the interracial aspect.
Yeah, right. But most of the families back there were just solid gold. I mean, I have no bad memories of any personal interactions. But you could just feel it in some of the people that you just know but don't know, you know, just people that live. And especially in the, I would say, mid-40s after the war, when the lumber business became a big boom, a lot of Southerners moved into the community and worked. And they were the ones that I felt most uncomfortable with. Although they didn't, most of them didn't really do anything personally. You could just, I don't know, at least I sensed it, that they weren't in full agreement.
I'm wondering if you can imagine what it would have been like for Doc Hay and Long On, you know, to be like back in the early 1900s or the late 1800s, what it must have been like for them.
Well, I would suspect it was a similar type of a situation. At first, they were probably very cautious, very, they didn't want to force their way in, but gradually as their success rate and acceptance in the community grew, I think the people became more friendly and more accepting, you know.
Well, I just was struck by the bullet holes on the front door.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that there were people that didn't like him. And you know, you hear stories about, well, there were some lynchings of Chinese people back then. And so you don't want to be too loud and forceful. Oh, yeah.
It doesn't hurt to have a skill everybody wants.
That's right. I mean, this is one thing that I think that made their acceptance easier. They had something that they could help the community with. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a different story if they didn't have anything to offer.
Oh, yes, I would think so. If they were just there as laborers. And, you know, back in the late 1800s, middle 1800s there, there were thousands of Chinese in the neighborhood. They were doing the mining and not far from there the railroads. And I know I had a relative, I guess he was about third generation over, great-granduncle or something like that. He worked on the railroad.
Where was that?
That was in Idaho. Yeah, and so, you know, but now those people, they just probably work and quietly can go home, and that's about it. There were no intermixing in the communities much.
People wonder why Dake never went home, you know, went to China.
Yeah. Well, I never knew why he didn't, because he, from what I know, he's got a wife back there and a family back there. But I think he sent him back money and all that to support him, but never went back.
I don't think he did, actually.
Didn't he? I thought he was sending money back there, but...
Is that what... Did you hear that from your dad? Or,
well, no? Yeah, my dad, you know, he didn't know what he was doing until he got over there, but he and Lungan, well, maybe because of his blindness or something too, he just lived out his life here. We never went into any of his personal stuff too much. I guess he just sort of left that up to him to decide.
You mentioned the railroad. Were they building it close to John Day at all?
No. John Day.
I didn't think that they did.
No, this was in Idaho that this relative was at. Because the only reason I knew about it was he came over, John Day, and visited a couple of times just to check in and see what was going on. When he retired, he came down to Portland and retired, so.
Is there any other memory you want to share? I mean, you've probably been asked this a lot from people, but just anything else that you can recall?
Well, of course, I was totally impressed with everything that Doc Hay did, because here was a blind man. He still practiced herbs. He knew where every item was in that house. If you went back there, you can see in that one section, there were all kinds of little boxes on the wall, and everyone had a separate type of herb. Well, he knew where each one of those were. He was able to get in there and get the amount of herbs he wanted to make up the recipe that whatever the illness required. And I just can't imagine doing something like that myself.
And he was blind.
Huh? Yeah.
Because there's hundreds of boxes.
Oh, yeah, that whole wall was just, you know, it just, yes, there were, I would say, what, about 8 going up and about, yeah, at least close to 100. So.
And they're high.
Yeah, yeah. And he just to know and not make a mistake, you know, and be able to effectively practice medicine that way.
Kind of a medical genius at that time.
He was a brilliant man. I mean, he did a lot of good work, and he cured a lot of people of a lot of bad illnesses. So, and then Dad carried on after him, and he did a lot of wonderful work.
How long did he?
Well, my dad practiced from 41, shortly after he got there, until 67, when he passed away. I think it was 67 he passed away.
I think it's interesting that there was so much, you know, Chinese medicine, and at that time, when now it's like, it's sort of the alternative, you know.
Yeah, they were the pioneers in it, I guess you might say. But during the war, it was sort of limited also to just what he could get. You know, the medicine was hard to get from China because of the Chinese embargo and all that kind of stuff during the Cold War period of the communists and all that. And so he had to cut back on what he could do, but he tried to get what he could through Canada and through San Francisco. So.
Now, you said you had been back 3 years earlier. What keeps you going back to John Day?
Well, friendship, I guess. Yeah, I went back this last time because of our reunion. We had a reunion of the whole high school from the time it was started in 1938 up to the present time. And we had a couple of hundred alumni attend, and it was good to see some of those people because some of them I hadn't seen since I graduated, and that's about 50 years ago.
That's great. Yeah. That's great.
Some of them I recognized and some I didn't recognize, but it was a great reunion. And I still have some friends back there that live there. So, yeah.
You know that they're building a new wing for the Camwachung Museum?
Yes.
Are you involved in that at all?
Not personally, no. I made a contribution for that, but they're also going to have some sort of a dedication ceremony here this summer sometime. And I'm looking forward to that. Maybe if I can, I'll probably run back there for that.
I think it's supposed to be in July.
Is that what it is?
Is there anything else you want to say at all?
Well, not much else. Personally, I've just got warm feelings for the community of John Day and the area of Grand County, because I was always treated fairly and warmly by all the residents there. And of course, I went back there and practiced for 7 years after I graduated from dental school, and because my mom had just passed away and I felt I should be with my dad at that time. And so it was an easy way to practice because everybody knew me and they loved me and I loved them, and we just got along real well. But no, I just have nothing but warm feelings for all the people back there.
I just think it's just such an unusual story because, you know, it's unusual in that everybody does have warm feelings, you know, because, I mean, the history is, you know, there was the Snake River Massacre during the same time as Dake. I mean, I'm sure you've heard about that. And, you know, there were all kinds of lynchings, as you said.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think this is a very unusual story.
Yeah, the Grand County people are very, very warm people. You treat them right, they're gonna treat you right. That's the way I found. And I guess a lot of the miners, after the mining quit, they just stayed on and worked at the various farms or ranches for a while as ranch hands. That's because they treated them well now. So. Yeah. You almost got my history of John Day.
Well, yeah.
I have some very close childhood friends. As a matter of fact, some of my very best friends are still from days of high school.
People live a long time out there, I noticed.
Yes, they do. And it's good country, you know. And if it weren't for my wife, who was born and raised here in Portland.
It's hard to go.
Going back there to nowhere's land.
I have to say I'm with her.
Yeah, well, that was a conflict that I ran into, and it's one that I had to deal with. And so with the kids growing up and my practice growing and all that, I had to make a decision back in 64 to, you know,
I just need to get like 10 seconds of just this room sound without us talking, just so that I can edit later. Tell me about the altar.
Yeah, well, Dake doesn't start the day without first going there and making sure that There's oil in there, and then it lights the oil light that comes from that, and makes his prayer, and then the day starts. Before then, I guess there was a Chinese temple-like building in the Chinese community area, just on down. I would say, let's see, where is it? It's about where the parking lot is now, before the swimming pool. There was a building there that I heard that was a temple. But there were about six buildings around that area when I first got there. That was one of them, I guess.
You know what kind of religion, or, I mean, that temple was very
unusual.
Well,
it's a Buddhist. It's a Buddhist religion. You'll see it sometimes in Chinese restaurants. They'll have a setup like that, and they use the Chinese punk and everything.
I thought it was an unusual looking altar,
yeah.
Though, because
yeah.
There's those.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are they lanterns or the things that are hanging?
Well, they are lanterns, but they're never lit. Yeah, most of the light is from that. From the punks that they light, and that light from the oil. So
the town never had any problems with him being a Buddhist at all?
No. I mean, he didn't try to convert anybody. He just doing his own thing down there, you know. And no, I don't think there were any complications or.
Yeah, some of the kids that I talked to said it was scary to walk in.
Well, it was, in that it was dark.
Now.
Yeah, now it is, yeah. It was dark. They had a very small wattage because, you know, he couldn't see, so there wasn't any need for light. But, yeah, and everything in there was of dark color, too. You know, everything was old. The round dinner tables, every time we sit down for dinner, instead of having a tablecloth, he just spread some newspaper, and that was a tablecloth, you know. And then he'd have his pot of tea there always, of course, when people come in, they were offered a cup of tea and all that right there. But the chairs were just old wooden chairs, no backs to them and all that. There wasn't a lot of comfort in there, but it was adequate to, you know, sit and visit a while. And they had a big potbelly stove in there to keep things warm. And then the kitchen stove, of course. And so everything was pretty Spartan. But, yeah, it's a different world, because anybody that elsewhere, the lighting and the furniture and everything would be different. Yeah. But he always greeted them. They like they said, there's always candy there, and there's always tea, and anybody want to stay for dinner when dinner time came up, they were welcome to do it. And that was the way they lived.
It's friendly drop-in kind
of
place.